Welcome to Inside Independent Publishing with IBPA. I'm your host, Christopher Locke. I'm also the IBPA Director of Membership and Member Services. Okay, so there are many considerations for independent publishers that want to sell books to the government, education, and healthcare markets. For example, well, how is selling into these markets different from the retail trade? How do you get started? And so on. So, IBPA Board Chair Karen Pavlison, who is the publisher of Elva Risa Publishing and the owner of Military Family Books, is here today to share tips and insights from her 25 plus years of navigating bulk sales, niche markets, and community advocacy programs as a primary business model. Hello, Karen. How are you?
Hi, I'm good. Happy to be here. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, well, I'm very happy to have you on the board. You're the new board chair, so that's exciting. And this is your area of expertise, so I'm excited to jump right in. So one thing I wanted to start out with, we're talking about all these, you know, different markets, and you specialize at Elva Risa Publishing for the military. So I just wanted to see, like, how did you even get started doing that?
Sure. Well, my husband, Bob, was a Marine, and he deployed a lot, and I was a key volunteer. So I'd gather up tips and share them with other spouses, and they started asking if I had these in a book, and Bob said, you should write that book. So I did. And at the time, there weren't many publishers interested in the topic of military family life, especially something as specific as surviving deployment. So the rejection letters piled up, including military-related publishers. They all said the market was too small. So I thought, I had a small press, Elva Risa, which I started with the help of IBPA. And so we published the book. And then we started getting submissions from agents and other military spouse authors. And it was about our third military family book when a director at a family support center on a base called and asked if we specialized in military family books because they needed more resources. And in that moment, I said, yes, that's what we do. And we've been partnering with them on resources ever since.
Well, I love that it's, you just started, you know, like you were struggling to whatever, you know, get places to carry them. And then you were just like, well, people said they want this product, so I'm just going to create this product. And I also love that IBPA, you said, was a help in the beginning. Real quick, like what was it that IBPA, just the resources that we have, or what was it?
I'd say number one was the community, both my regional affiliate and at the national level. I mean, just a place that I could ask questions. And as, you know, as we started navigating this, I mean, we started doing some really different things. And so it's hard when you're doing it on your own. And IBPA has a community of people who are doing a lot of different things. I mean, even when you look at our online store, it was a very different way of going about it. We started selling online in, I think, 2006. And it was a similar situation. Some of our military customers started requesting other publishers' books for their orders and wondering if we could source them. And at the same time, publishers started publishing one or two books for military families, and they would come to us and say, could you help promote these to your customers? And so we kind of became a matchmaker. And over the years, that consultative approach has made us one of the preferred suppliers, and not just for military customers, but as educators and healthcare professionals have been more interested in learning how to support military families, we've seen growth in those markets as well. And one of the ways IBPA supported us was having a community of people who aren't afraid to step out and try those things and who've done something similar in other markets.
Well, and I also love that it, like, seems that the word yes is the important thing here. Like, anyone that comes to you and says, do you do this? Do you do that? And you go, yes, we do. And then you figure out how to do it. So that's great. Okay, so I want to go back for the help of other people that are looking to get into this. So selling to government, education, and the healthcare markets can be very different from the retail trade distribution, okay? So what are some things that publishers should be thinking about when they're considering doing these markets?
Yeah, well, there are very different requirements. And so I think one of the most important things, the first step is really to assess the long-term opportunity and the viability for managing these markets for your press and your books. So basically creating the business case. Because in most situations, it's not about pursuing a one-time large order. It's really about how you approach these markets over time and grow your sales and relationships. And it's certainly not for everyone. If you think about all the things you know about the retail trade, setting up relationships with distributors and wholesalers and retailers and marketing and readers, all the logistics that support that. You'll do the same thing in these markets, but in most cases, it will be with a different set of partners. So I usually tell publishers to kind of consider a few different questions. One is what the niche markets are that make sense for your program. And another is the staff time and effort that's necessary to manage all the regulations and those ongoing relationships in that market. And I think you just want to walk through some examples to see if you're set up for success. So, for example, many of the sales in these markets are bulk or quantity sales. And it's nice to think about selling non-returnable books by the case. But if you get those bulk orders, do you have a warehouse? Are you set up distribution-wise to fulfill those within the timeframe and specifications on the contracts? And does the financial model make sense, especially with today's supply chain challenges? Usually, print-on-demand cost of goods does not support a bulk sales model. And you may be able to fill some orders with digital print runs, but long-term, you'll want to be able to manage offset print runs and carry inventory of your popular titles.
Right, yeah. So you'll have to start doing research about printers that do that and then decide, are they in the U.S.? Are they outside the U.S.? Like, it just sounds like that's like a lot of legwork before you even start publishing the book itself, finding all these different places that you need to go to. Okay, so then the follow-up I'd say is like what would be a good approach to start doing like these types of assessments to figure out like if it's a good option for you as a publisher for the whatever the niche market that you're looking to do.
Sure. I would say start by looking for synergies with your publishing company's mission and your content's audience, your author's passions and community involvement. You know, what kind of community advocacy programs are they already participating in? What events do they attend or lead? For example, Alvarez's authors lead military family workshops. They go to Capitol Hill and advocate for military family rights. They work at national nonprofits, leading programs for military families. And so our support for their passions and advocacy work naturally extends to partnering with those organizations to create resources for their programs. And that's really the second step that I would recommend is to look for those potential partners whose mission aligns with yours that are already in that space. You know, tap into that community, look for like-minded organizations with similar missions. Primarily, Alvarez partners with organizations that support military families as part of their core mission. And then, you know, I think it really helps determine if it's a good fit to take some time to learn the processes to selling to these markets. Because just as I mentioned with the retail trade, it takes time and effort to learn the ecosystem and the players and the regulations and the best avenue for your publishing house. And understanding the rules will help you determine if you have the resources to sustain participating in that market.
Yeah, well, I want to get to the some of the details of like the specific selling, but I also want to ask, so like in terms of the books, I imagine you have to think, like, how do you figure out what type of book they need? Like if it's like the military, for example, like are you talking, like I know you know people in the military, so I guess some of them are saying like in the beginning, hey, we need a book about blank, but like how are you as a publisher figuring out what that market needs so that then you're making the books they want rather than for like a fiction book, you know, like I'm an author publisher and so I'm like, I want to write a book about whatever. So I don't have to think about necessarily, you know, like what the market wants other than if I actually want to sell books. But like for you all, you very specifically have to know what that market wants or else you're not going to sell any. So anyway, I'm interested in how you find out what they really want in terms of books.
Sure. Well, one of the ways is we participate in that community. So our team members, our authors, you know, we're talking with military families. Many of us live the military family life. And so we know some of those challenges, but we also keep track of all of the research that's going on and what the top organizations are saying. So for example, today actually we're launching a book called Remote Work for Military Spouses. And military spouse unemployment is a really big issue right now. It's 5 times the national average. And so understanding those and understanding what could we do to help with that and what kind of resources are needed there. And some of our partner organizations and some of our military spouses are experts in that area. So we work very closely with them to make sure that whatever resource we're putting out is really valuable to them and can be used in their programs.
And that's why when you pick a particular market, if you are personally immersed in it, you know, like your husband, you know, was in the military, so it's like you know firsthand how all this works. So I think it's partly passion too. Like you're immersed in that world. Okay, so you were talking about specifics about if you want to sell to a specific market, and so you sell military books to the government. So like, let's say some other publisher out there wanted to get started with that. Like, what are the places they need to set up and all that stuff?
Sure. Well, I'd say absolutely the first stop is PTAC. So you go to aptac-us.org. That's the Association of Procurement Technical Assistance Centers. You can select your state and region and find the PTAC office closest to your location. And this is a free service. I highly recommend it. PTAC counselors are experienced in government contracting. They provide classes and matchmaking events and counseling. They can help you understand and get started with all the necessary registrations and certifications that will help you successfully compete for government contracts. And they can even sign you up to receive access to bid opportunities, procurement histories, and other helpful information. And then the next thing is, if your business is not yet set up in SAM.gov, it's SAM.gov, you'll need to go through that registration and validation process, and PTAC can help you with that. But your SAM registration has to be approved before you can bid on or be awarded government contracts. And then regarding the certifications, the government and certain corporations set aside contracts to be awarded to businesses with those certain certifications. So if you qualify, it's definitely worth going through the certification process. Examples would be the small business certification, women-owned, minority-owned, veteran-owned, hub zone, economically disadvantaged, B Corp. You can go to the Small Business Administration site, sba.gov, for the qualifications and certification processes. And then it's also important to remember that there are different registrations for federal and state. So depending on the region, but also the level of contracts you do, you might receive payments by government purchasing card, or you might need to register in the federal or state procurement system to receive payment. So, for example, our larger government contracts go through the Defense Finance and Accounting Systems contracting system. But we also do a lot of work with the National Guard, which is state-based. And so we're also registered in, for example, the state of Minnesota supplier portal, which is called SWIFT.
So we're talking about a lot of different types of places you have to register. Is it costing money to register at all these places?
No.
Oh, okay, good. I was like, whew, that's starting to get expensive. Okay. So we also talked about education and healthcare. So that what you just said was specifically like government and military and all that. So how is it different for those other two markets?
Well, education procurement processes, they vary by state and sometimes by school district. And it takes a lot of time in the beginning to get set up in all the databases and to become an approved vendor. And it can be a little intimidating at first, but just like you gather metadata for your books, you'll create a set of metadata for your publishing company that will contain all the usual information that's asked for the approval processes. And as you gain contracts and do a good job fulfilling those, you'll become a preferred supplier too. So there's a couple of different types of procurement in the education market that people might be familiar with. I think many people think of curriculum adoption, which is for resources that meet grade level education standards and usually go through a pretty lengthy process for use in the classroom. And that process is different for grade school and high school and higher education. And this might be an option for publishers that focus on textbooks or books that could be used as curriculum supplements. We're not an academic publisher, so we rarely go through that process. We've not had a lot of good luck with it. But instead, we look for creative partnerships, things like community programs or PTA book clubs, school liaison programs, educator professional development trainings, after school programs. We sell to those programs that take place with the teachers and counselors and parents, administrators, or that directly support the students outside the classroom. And then we also make sure our books are available through the wholesalers that those educators use for their other resources. And similar for healthcare, there's a variety of ways to enter the market. you can sell to individuals for their own professional use or people who refer to their clients. So for example, we have a lot of counselors and therapists who use our books in their work supporting military families, or you can sell to organizations or wellness centers for adoption in their programs or use in medical education and reference. So for example, Alvareza has agreements with suppliers who bring both digital and physical content to employee assistance programs at corporations or to medical libraries and universities. And we could never reach those markets on our own. We don't do enough resources to be a big player. But we do have individual books that audience wants to access. And so by partnering with their regular suppliers, we can support the medical professionals who use our content both for themselves and for their students and clients. And similar to the government market, you know, learning the way organizations already discover and purchase books and being open to distributing through those wholesalers that they already work with can just make your books more discoverable. And that discoverability can lead to the bulk sales or course adoptions or even custom editions.
Yeah, well, I'm glad you mentioned distribution because I did want to ask about that. So IBPA all the time has members asking about traditional distribution. And for anyone who's listening, doesn't know what that is, it's not like wholesale distribution where you have like Ingram Spark or Lightning Source. It's actually having a sales team that goes out and sells your books, and you have to be accepted for that, and it can be very difficult to get that. So that's something I want to ask you. Is that something that like these publishers need to, like, do you need to have that set up to sell to these markets? Or like you were saying, it is possible to succeed even if you don't have traditional distribution.
Yeah, I think it works both ways. Some traditional book distributors focus on the retail trade. Some do what they call special sales into these markets. So I say the first step is if you do have traditional distribution, have a conversation with them because your agreement is likely to be exclusive, but might be exclusive only to certain markets. And so that's the first step is to figure out, does my distributor already go into those markets or not? And even if they do some in that market, we have some traditional distribution, but we also have non-exclusive agreements that our distributors okay with that are with healthcare distributors where they're going and proactively selling into these markets because they know that there's an interest in our resources and they want to have it in their catalog and be able to offer it to their clients as well.
And we've talked about community advocacy programs, or you mentioned that. So I wanted to see, can you just define like what that is and maybe give a few examples?
Sure. So there are organizations that kind of pick up a cause, right? And that cause might be related to your mission or what you're trying to do with your content. And so when you find those, and each niche market usually has some kind of nonprofit or advocacy group, and the way you find them is they're usually in the news and they're usually trying to put forward some kind of message or cause or advocate for a particular group. And that group may also be important to you. And so there's, for example, the book that we have coming out today on military spouse employment. There are many groups that take up that cause and they go to Capitol Hill and they go to their local governments and they try to influence certifications for teachers and attorneys and stuff so that when military spouses cross state lines, they're not left behind. There's a way for them to be able to continue to work in those fields. And so aligning yourself with those organizations can often lead to your authors speaking with those organizations or being one of the lead advocates and for resources to be carried in the programs that those organizations have for your end readers.
Yeah, so it's not just selling your books to them, it's like becoming an active, like, I don't know, even like member practically, like you're helping them through this cause. And so then you're like we were talking about immersing yourself in that world, and then they might carry the books for that very reason.
Right.
Okay, that's interesting. So what about, I think you mentioned custom editions, so I wanted to ask, is that like a normal part of selling to, and maybe you, can you say like, what are custom editions of books, and then like, do you all do that?
Yeah. Well, first I'll say it's definitely something you want to be open to. And custom editions can be as simple as logo stickers or inserts in an existing book, all the way to completely new content for a particular organization. And Alvaresa, we've repurposed content in a variety of ways. So for example, one of the national nonprofits we work with was creating special care packages for military spouses of deployed service members. And the packages had a variety of wellness items, and they wanted to include our popular deployment journal for spouses. But the retail version was too large to fit in the pouch. So we did a special print run of a smaller version that it was the same content inside, but a smaller trim size. And instead of a hardcover with a ribbon, this custom edition was a paperback with French flaps. And instead of a retail barcode, we had a special message printed on it from the organizer. And another example that would be kind of outside of the realm of the print books in terms of custom editions, our individual ebooks are distributed through our trade distributor, but they only sell into retail and not the healthcare market. So as I said, we have a lot of inquiries about our content in the medical community, especially doctors and therapists working with veterans and military spouses. And so we entered this agreement with a major healthcare distributor that has a digital content database with medical institutions and medical libraries. And the healthcare distributor converts our ebooks into searchable XML files and makes our content available on a subscription model to that market that's not reached by trade distribution. It's the same content again, but in a custom digital format to meet their research needs and classroom needs and so on. And so that example isn't exactly a print custom edition or even a digital custom edition. It actually technically falls under a subsidiary rights license since it's the distributor's custom technology platform. But thinking outside the norm and being open to those discussions can open all kinds of new opportunities for market access.
Yeah, well, so, I mean, I know it costs a lot of money to, you know, print a physical copy of a book. And if you're making this custom edition, like, how much are you working with them in terms of what the, like, final outcome is going to be in terms of, like, the cost? Like, if you're making a different size, trim size, you're adding whatever, different flaps and stuff. So you must then work with them, like, because you're doing it just for them, you must work with them and be like, okay, well, this is going to cost us whatever, $10 a book or something. What's the conversation like that?
It really depends on the partner and what we're trying to do together. So in that particular example with the national organization, we had a stuffing or event at the Capitol, and we participated in that with them. And it was a really important campaign for us as well. So we really passed along the print costs, and we didn't charge them for just changing the file a little bit, right? So it was not that big a deal for us to change the trim size. But we actually, when we sent the files to the printer, we had all the books shipped directly to this organization's warehouse. So we never actually touched the physical book other than a couple of samples sent to us.
Oh, okay. All right. Yeah. So, and so it seems like it's really a partnership. Like you're working directly with them, and there's a lot of conversations about how all that works. Okay. Well, thanks. Yeah. That custom editions, I think, is something that maybe people don't think as much about. So that's another interesting avenue. Okay. So let's move to marketing. It's certainly something that is always overwhelming, just like, distribution. Okay, so how do you market, are you marketing your publishing company, or are you marketing your books differently to all these different markets?
Yeah, there are some specific tips for marketing in these markets. So first, just be aware that you might need different materials than you might be used to. For example, in these markets, you'll develop what's called a capabilities statement. And when you meet with your PTAC rep, they'll help you create one. But it's essentially all the metadata for your company, your certifications, your North American Industry Classification System codes, the types of books you offer. And buyers will use this to figure out how you fit into their process and to know what to buy from you. It's kind of like a resume for your business. The other tip I would say is to speak their language. So, your marketing materials for the trade are different from end consumer, and they'll be different in these markets as well. You'll want to package your collections in a way that makes sense to this audience. They aren't necessarily going to recognize terms like front list and backlist and BISAC and Lexile levels. And so you'll want to put things in their terms. And to do that, you'll want to get to know how they use their resources. And we talked about this a little bit. So, for example, when we started working with after school programs, we learned a lot about how our journals and activity books for individual kids were used differently from large group read aloud books and discussion guides in those programs. And so we actually regularly involve our customers and partners in the early creation of our materials to make sure that they can be used in their programs. And we ask them how to label the resources in our marketing. And that, you know, if it's working for those groups, it's likely to be working for other groups as well in that market. And then in addition to marketing differently, I think it's important to be aware that the pricing structure may be different. So you want to get to know what's most important about the cost structure to your customers. For example, some customers in these markets are used to paying much higher per item prices than what paperbacks sell for at online retailers. So a discount on an individual book may be less important than offering, say, free shipping. So some of our accounts, a freight charge or a credit card fee opens a whole different process for their PO approvals. And for other customers, they need the total amount to fall under a certain threshold. So, for example, sometimes we add a special discount to get them under a purchasing card spending limit. So it's important to understand the levers both in marketing and pricing that make it easy for them and still viable for you, so you can be consistent in your accounting processes. And then lastly, I'd say, related to what I mentioned earlier about learning the rules, each of these markets does have some different rules about marketing. So, for example, sometimes you aren't allowed to market to government buyers. That person manages the transaction, but only after a program manager says they want to order it. So you have to nurture a few different types of relationships, and that becomes clear once you get started.
Yeah, and in terms of some of those, like the pricing structure that will help them buy your books, like if you don't know that stuff, like are they, like, I mean, again, like I guess you're working with them on that stuff, but like, are they going to maybe come across your stuff and go, oh, that's not, you know, the way we do it, and then just skip by it? Like, you must have to constantly be talking to all these different people to find out what they need, and then you can adjust, right?
Yeah, it works both ways. I mean, for some of the newer buyers, actually, we've been doing this so many years that some of them ask us for advice to make sure they're following the rules. There are certain circumstances, like with government bids, that if you don't follow the rule, they just kick you out. Mm-hmm. So it is really important to be aware of the situation that you're going into and the rules that are essential. Even things like for certain contracts, the books have to be printed in the U.S. So if they aren't, it's like 32 more pages to the contract. And it might say right in the bid that that's not allowed. So you just have to look at the details of it. But like I said, once you get started, and the PTAC reps are really good about helping with that too.
Yeah. So you run the company, you own it and all that. So like, are you the one at your company keeping track of all this stuff? Or do you have someone who's hired that you're like, hey, you're the one who's in charge of all these details? How does that work?
Well, I do have help. You know, my bookkeeper certainly helps because there's a lot of rules that aren't necessarily related to publishing books. So when you drop ship, for example, if you don't have Nexus in that state or you don't have a resale certificate in that state, even though you're selling to a tax-exempt organization, there are certain forms that you need and paperwork that you need. And so I do have help. But for the conversations that are relationship-based, I do try to have those conversations myself because a lot of it is about that long-term relationship and understanding where they see the synergies with us as well as what we see in the synergies in working with them.
So you got to be a nice person. All right. Good to know. I guess I'll work on it. What are some other challenges that publishers should be aware of in these types of markets? Anything overall?
Well, I'd say a big one is inventory management, right? Because you might sell 100 copies of a title one week and 1,500 copies the next day. There isn't really a great algorithm for bulk sales, but over time, you can build relationships with your VIP customers and those partners and anticipate buying trends. And they'll also start to trust your recommendations if you need to use an alternate title when necessary. And I found that in these markets, the buying seasons tend to be more closely related to fiscal year budgets. So understanding your customers' budgeting process and their pain points and restrictions and what they need for their audits and rules for things like purchasing card limits, this can all go a long way. And for all these markets, like we've said, it is really important to follow the rules. It can be a little overwhelming, but there's so many people that can help you. And through all those state representatives and federal representatives and the educational programs that they offer, you'll learn pretty quickly to create checklists for your teams to make sure that you have the correct federal acquisition regulation compliance forms on file, or to find out things like if they have a commercial doc to send a pallet and what the weights are that would make that more cost effective, and if the books need to be there for an event, and if you can sell books at an event, or if they have to buy the books and have them shipped to a certain location for the events, and even just how to share best practices between customers so that you can help them succeed in their program, something that worked for someone else. And the more you learn and the more your efforts are aligned with your customers' goals, the more they trust you and the more that they'll come back to you for that next order.
Mm-hmm. Sure. Yeah. See, some of these things, like, this is why, like, I'm an author publisher and I just love writing, because, like, you're like, you need to register with blank blank. And I'm like, oh, this is sounding very complicated. My hat off to you, because it sounds like it probably in the beginning was like a huge learning curve, all this stuff. I mean, I'm grateful you're sharing this with, you know, our members and other publishers. But I bet when you started out, all these things, you're like, oh, we have to sign up with that too. You know, like it must have been kind of overwhelming.
Well, and some days it still is.
Right? Yeah.
You know, the regulations change, and suddenly the form that we filled out last year that has the same number on it has been revised twice, and we have to make sure we have the right one. So it can be a little overwhelming. But that's why I say in the beginning, it's really important to assess if you do have the resources, if it long-term is really a great fit. Because if it is, you know, this is our primary business model now, and it is a really good fit for what we do and the authors we want to support and the community that we want to be a part of.
Right. And the books that y'all are creating are genuinely helpful to this community. Like, that must be very rewarding, that I'm sure you have people coming to you and saying, I needed this. Like, it really helped me get through a hard time or something. And that's the reward.
It is. Yes. 100%. I love that part of my job. Our mission is to make a positive difference in people's lives. And everyone who signs up to work with us, I mean, they believe in that too. And so there is a lot of advocacy, a lot of doing good in the world, and a lot of appreciation for the resources that help just make life a little bit easier for people.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. So before we head out, are there any last thoughts to help people get through this very complex process?
Well, you know, I think selling to niche markets outside the trade, whether it's the highly structured and regulated market like the federal government or a less formal process like the community-based programs like we talked about, I think it comes down to a few things. I mean, first, of course, you want to create quality books that people want to read and use in their programs, right? Like, that's step one. And the second thing is just understanding the market and customers enough to make it easy for them to buy in a way that allows them to comply with all their regulations, what's also financially and procedurally viable and beneficial for your publishing company. It has to be a long-term win-win, or it's really not worth pursuing. And then third is, you know, as we talked about, it's really just about nurturing those relationships. So you're truly supporting each other and furthering your shared missions and making a difference for your shared communities. And I think that's ultimately why a lot of independent publishers do what we do, right? To influence perspective and to make a difference in the world. And if we can find creative partners and distribution options to help us do that, I think it's a really cool bonus, no matter what market you use to reach your readers.
Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I want to make sure to mention that, Elva Race, you all won a Best Book About Military Service in the International Latino Book Award. So congratulations. So I don't speak Spanish. So tell me how to pronounce the name of the book that's in Spanish.
Atrapa la Estrella.
Okay, great. And it's so the book is a popular children's picture book. It's the Spanish language version of Night Catch, right? And it's a story about a soldier and his son who play catch with the North Star during the dad's deployment. I bet people shed a few tears when they're reading that one. And you also have a new release, Remote Work for Military Spouses, that you mentioned. And it's a guide to help military spouses grow meaningful careers while moving with the military. And you also have A Girl's Guide to Military Service for Young Women Considering a Career in Any of the Military Branches. So a lot going on right now. All right. So for a variety of quality resources for military families, please visit elvaresa.com, ELVARESA.com. Or militaryfamilybooks.com. So I can't tell you how much I appreciate you sharing your knowledge. 25 plus years as an independent publisher is proof that you know what you're doing. So congratulations. I know it's, like you said, even still sometimes overwhelming. But it's when those people come up to you and they say that I loved your book, and then you go, okay, I guess it is complicated, but that right there saved my day. So we hope everyone listening will watch this podcast. It comes out the last Thursday of every month. And also, if you want to learn more about IBPA membership, make sure to go to our website, which is ibpa-online.org. Thank you so much, Karen. Really appreciate it. You've got a lot going on also with us at IBPA. So thank you for your guidance with the being board chair. And thanks, everyone, for listening. Have a wonderful day, everyone.
Thank you.